Hey, I'm Lance Frazier.
Name is Rosie Bowden.
My name is Trey Mason.
You're listening to the Piffles Podcast.
I'm Cameron Marshall, and you're listening to the Piffles Podcast.
It's so fun.
Stay tuned.
Here we go. It's episode 114 of the Piffles Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
And I'm here this week.
You are, but you don't have the Iron Man streak. That belongs to me.
I'll get it back.
And I wrote in my notes, I don't know if you guys have it here, Alex has Iron Man streak, suck it. So there you go. Back to me. I'm happy. We are your Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
Iron Man streak, how? Can we do Endgame spoilers or no?
It's after the second event, so we can.
Okay, you can have the Iron Man streak if you want it.
Well, everybody knows what happens to Iron Man, right? Like, I haven't even seen it.
The Spider-Man trailer came out today, and yeah, it's a lot of heavy sorrow over the loss of Iron Man.
Everybody kind of knows what happens to Iron Man. If you've paid attention to the Marvel series, you know what's going to happen to Iron Man.
They were building this up the entire time. Like, his sacrifice was the end of it.
Because
it
started with him. So, you know, I guess he just did. Way to go, Greg. So if somebody hasn't seen Endgame yet, you just ruined their life.
Oh, well. Can we spoil Game of Thrones next?
If they haven't seen Endgame yet, they
can I rant about the spoilers and Game of Thrones? Jeez, we should get back to the rants.
Starbucks Cup?
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We're your Saskatchewan Rough Riders fan podcast, even though it sure doesn't sound like it. Give us a follow on Twitter, at PifflesPod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You'll find me at Safamod.
Follow me at Greg on Sports.
I'm going to give a special shout-out here. Follow my wife, Amy, at RealAmyD. If you hear noises in the background, she's making cookies. So we're basically killing time until cookies are done so we can have them.
I'm for sure eating one right now.
Okay, well, they're done, so I guess we're done, too.
Okay, see you guys. All right. See you next week.
The best episode of Piffles Podcast ever.
We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. Check us out on Instagram. Just search Piffles Pod. Go to the website, piffespodcast.com. Of course, the Piffles Podcast is brought to you by Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Check out the great happy hour drink specials, half price Monday to Friday, and the Dreamsicle dipped cone. We still have to go get some because I haven't had one yet, and I really, really want one.
How?
Yeah, they got back.
No, there's no reason. No excuse.
The summer berry cake cup fection. That is hard to say. Me and the person on the drive through went back and forth like 5 times trying to say it properly. Bloody well amazing.
What is it?
It is, it's kind of like a parfait. But it's got like cake and icing and berry mixture and ice cream and it's so good.
What if I don't like cake, though?
Then you're in trouble.
Stupid.
You don't like cake?
Not really. I'd rather have cookies.
Well, we've had that debate before too, I think. But
I mean, I'd rather have like cookies, cake. But cake is still amazing.
Yeah, still good.
Well, let's get to it. We have a lot to get to. Some Rider news, CFL draft, and we have guest coming up to talk about that, so let's just jump right in here. Time for the opening kickoff. You're back to laughing at it?
Apparently.
All right, so Rider news. Eli Buka, defensive back, is back with the Riders. What's his third, fourth time's a charm, whatever his third time's a charm?
Third time, yeah.
And coming back from the NFL after yet another shot there, and of course getting injured in the NFL and whatever, but Eli Buka back, and that kind of solidifies the back half of our defense with Mike Edom. As Nationals, I should say.
I can't fault a guy for going after his dream and NFL. Dude, just stay here and play football. Like, at some point, you got to play, yeah.
And I think at this point, he might be doing that, and he's going to get a lot of chance to get a lot of meaningful reps in this defense. He could be playing linebacker as well, too. He's a cover guy. You could throw him at corner. You can put him at safety. You can move Edom in to linebacker a little bit. There's a lot of possibilities with our defensive backs and linebackers.
And you combine this pick with the, or this pick, this signing with the Dakota Shepley signing from a couple, month and a half?
A month ago now, yeah.
Whenever it was, we signed Dakota Shepley. It really flipped the tables on our national situation going into the season. It went from, you know, there's a bit of a concern to we might actually have a little bit of depth. This signing is not going to go unnoticed throughout the year.
And if you, and depending on how the CBA goes, it's no secret that both the PA and the CFL are looking at scaling back that ratio, whether it's five, but it's probably most likely going to be six. The Riders already have three offensive linemen set. They've got Evans and a bunch of D-tackles behind him. They got linebackers, and then you got your safety. There's your six guys right there. And we're going to talk about it going forward. If we can get a receiver set up, well, we're just laughing.
Yeah. Team's in good position. It's much different, drastically different from what we saw just a couple short years ago with Canadian talent. So obviously good signing there. And I hope that in the next, couple of days, we hear about another signing, a linebacker maybe by chance. We all know the Mike Riley effect finally took its first real casualty, and that's Solomon Elamamian.
BC was never in salary cap trouble. Twitter told me so when they signed Riley.
Twitter lied to you, Greg.
Why do I believe Twitter?
Because you're stupid.
Oh, there we go. But follow us on Twitter.
Yeah,
follow us on Twitter. But it was obvious when you had Burnham signing for $300, you have Riley signing for $700.
Aaron Grimes, Chung Carter.
There's like $2 million in those handful of players on $5, maybe $6 million cap this year. It ain't going up that high. So you have a third-year team on five guys. What are you going to do? Something had to go.
You cut Yellow M&M.
And if people don't get that reference, he actually told us back at CFL Week when it was here in Regina, that was the best name he's ever been called at Taylor Field at the time. But yeah, Yellow M&M.
Stuck with me ever since.
And yeah, exactly.
It's probably my favorite comment from any interview other than the Rail Guard interview.
And you can't play that on the air.
Yeah, we're not allowed to right? play that NSFW. So Solomon Elamamian, would you guys, obviously his talent, but coming off that wrist injury where he only played four games last year, is it a big risk? Do you guys really see it as such a big risk and he's past his prime and we should get Jeff Knox Jr. instead? Because I don't really buy that. Jeff Knox Jr., while a good player, he's not a future Hall of Famer like Solomon Elamamian is. And look what happened last time. We got a Hall of Famer from BC on the last year of his deal. That worked out pretty damn well for us when we got G. Roy Simon.
And this
isn't a long-term solution either. We know that. Solomon Elamamian is a two-year guy at best on this team, maybe? Maybe three?
And what's in 2 years?
We got the Grey Cup coming up in 2 years.
Bingo.
And that's what this team should be building for right now. Yes, they should be building to win right now in 2019, but the main goal of this team should be to win in 2020 at home, the same way it was in 2013. If you can get Solomon Elamamian here, and he can have two more really good years, doesn't have to be super elite years, but very, very solid years, I think it's a no-brainer. You have to sign him. And I have a question about that coming up after this, but you got... I don't know if I would say he's a must-sign, but I would spend the money on him.
Can I just say, and I love Jeff Knox Jr. Love the guy. Huge fan. But I don't get the love affair for him.
Well, because he wore green for a couple of years.
He had one damn good year in 2015.
Was that a good year by a good player? Or was that a good year by a average player on a terrible defense? So yes. He had to stand out.
Yes.
And I'm not knocking him at all. I don't think he's an average player. I think he's above average. But I don't think he's this elite all-star that everyone's making him out to be.
If he was, he'd be signed right now.
We've talked about this privately. I have a mathematical theory when it comes to CFL players. I call it the Rider scale. If you wear green, you are at least 75% better than you actually are in the face of Rider fans. And if you have never wore green, you're just garbage.
Unless the potential for wearing green comes up.
Exactly. And even then, you only bump up to 25% until you actually put on the jersey, and then you are imbued with Superman-type powers to become the best player ever. It's math. It's not Scott Steiner math, damn it, but it's math.
Once a Rider, always a Rider. I've seen, so you've said it, you had an article about it, and all of the comments were just, no, go for Jeff Knox. And I'm looking at it going, why? What has he done over the last 3 years that would make you want to go, we need him on this team. He's going to make us instantly better. Way better than a guy who averages 137 tackles a year. Not actual numbers, I made that number up. But
pretty close to it.
Yeah, though. It's close.
Elamamian is well over 100 tackles a year guy. He makes plays nonstop. Why?
And I get the four games last year. I get the risk, but it's going to come down. Obviously, it's going to come down to contract. If the Riders overpay for him and we have to clear something, like clear a possible asset out to make room for Aluminium when you could have gotten Knox for cheaper to keep the other asset, unfortunately, that's football. But you won't know what's going to happen until you actually get him in and see if he's going to last all season. If he lasts all season, he's worth it.
And there leads into my next question for you guys. Who would you have to lose to sign Solomon Aluminium? Would you have to lose a guy like...
Zach Caleros.
That was the first name that popped into my head, dude.
Would you have to lose a guy like Naaman Roosevelt? Would you have to lose a guy like maybe a Derek Moncrief?
I don't think you lose either of those guys. I think we have the advantage here that we don't have a $700,000 quarterback to really make...
But you have a Micah Johnson, who's the highest paid defensive player in the league. You have a Charleston Hughes, who's not... He's not on a small contract, that's for sure. Evans is getting paid big money.
That defense is expensive, and but the Gainey's offense is not.
Money, right? Like,
you're looking at Gainey or Charleston, unfortunately. Probably. If you're going to bring in a defensive guy, you're not going to take anything away from the offense. You what can't. Offense? Exactly. Anything you have on offense, you need. So it's going to be, unfortunately, a guy up there in years that you can replace with a cheaper guy. And it's either going to be Gainey or Charleston Hughes, and you pray that Chad Jeter is as good as you think he is.
And A.C. Leonard.
And then you run Micah and Zach. Like, I love Charleston, but you could probably get rid of him, unfortunately.
Is that one of those like Wally Buono type moves? Get rid of a guy 1 year too early, then
keep him 1 year too late? That's what BC thought they were doing last year, and he had a hell of a season. So maybe this year's it. Or Calgary, sorry.
They also thought they were sending him to Hamilton.
Yeah, which is even better.
Get out of the division. Yeah. So you guys agree? Solomon Aluminium would be a good fit on this defense?
Absolutely.
Hell yeah.
All right. So Solomon Aluminium, please, come to the Riders. I'd love to see you here. My only question is what number would he wear? Because he can't wear 56 because that's already retired.
And an actual retirement that I agree with.
And do the numbers really mean that much? You know, if you're
some players, they do.
If you're a guy who has a choice between two teams and you're sitting there going, well, I know with this team I can wear my number. Does that ever factor in?
Probably not. 50, I'd like to think not.
If you wouldn't mind dropping down, number 55 is available. So he could stay by there. But, yeah, like, in the 50s, 50, 51, 54, 55 are all available.
I say do it. Sign them.
Exactly. I don't care what it is.
Honestly, don't even care what it costs. Go over a little bit of the cap to pay a little bit of a penalty if you're getting
all the that's summer. Cheating.
Yeah.
Following the rules is cheating.
Sorry. I'm looking at the numbers right now. Katie Cannon's wearing number 6.
How did he switch from number 20?
Yep.
Excellent.
Ooh. I can't wait for the rage.
And that's one thing that hasn't really been talked about. We'll get to that in a little bit here. Opening kickoff presented by Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty. Check out her Facebook page, Kathy Festian, Royal LePage. So, CFL draft. That was the big thing that happened over the last little bit. That was last Thursday. Riders needed receivers. I said that round one, they had to go with a receiver. You can get an O-lineman if you need to in round number two. And you mentioned the Dakota Shepley signing. And that basically solidified the fact that the Riders did not need to go after an O-lineman high in the draft. And, well, they didn't. First round, number 6 overall, Justin McInnes out of Arkansas State. The guy who's 6'6", 210. So, you know, that typical Chris Jones body mold. But, I mean, that's who Jeremy O'Day has been learning from the last couple of years.
Dude's got speed, too.
But the guy is fast. He's got...
fast, big, and tall. What a terrible receiver.
Yeah, just had a trial with the Indianapolis Colts for their mini camp. Didn't get offered a contract. This upcoming weekend, he has one with the Tennessee Titans. And we'll see what happens out of that. But if he doesn't stick on with the Titans, he's probably going to be here in time for training camp, which is great news for the Riders. Second round, number 15 overall, Braden Linus Dickey. Another receiver, 6'5", 230, out of New Mexico.
Local boy.
Fun, yeah, and that's the thing. He grew up in Regina. His mom still lives here. His dad used to play for the Riders. This is a guy who grew up going to Taylor Field and like helping out with the equipment and everything. Like it's a really cool story behind him.
I wish I would look this up. Has there ever been a second generation rider?
Oh, there has to have been.
Oh yeah, probably.
Probably. I just can't think of any off the top of my head though. Like not like recently. Like that's my point. Nothing, because you think that'd be like yelled off the mountaintops here What moans we do have, anyway.
The Cypress Hills
tops. Yeah, the Cypress Hills.
But another, obviously, first two picks going for wide receiver, even if one of them pans out to becomes a starter in this league, you already did a great job in the draft. Because that was the one need that this team has right now for Canadian positioning.
And Greg mentioned it earlier, that's not even a need at this point. That is a bonus to have a Canadian receiver. It gives us so much flexibility. All you need is one of them to work out, and it's smooth sailing.
So now we look at our receiver depth, and we have Patrick Lavoie, who's more of a tight end, fullback, hybrid kind of player. He's a blocking player, but he can kind of leak out. But he's not a big play guy. He's going to be a dependable second down receiver.
He's in the Spencer Moore role.
Yeah, pretty much. And then you have Corey Watson, who's 35 years old, who isn't really going to give you much, being completely honest here. He's, and I hate saying this, but it's absolutely true, the token seventh. And I mean, we had that last year, and we have that again this year, but with a 35-year-old. And then Mitch Pickton, who's a complete unknown. You can't just throw him into the starting lineup. So there's competition there, which is good, but it's young competition, and hopefully one of these two guys can beat out Corey Watson for that, I guess, starting
receiver
role.
Nothing against Corey Watson. I'm sure he's a nice guy, but relying on a 35-year-old receiver who hasn't really done a whole hell of a lot through his career, other than he was a rider once, so he's got to be good, according to your math.
Full circle. He got traded for Jordan Hughes, so... Yeah.
Now they're together again?
Yeah, there we go. They should go out for lunch or something one day. I think that'd be fun. going back to the draft, there was no third-round pick. That was traded in the Vernon Adams trade, who eventually got traded for Charleston Hughes. So basically, we gave up that third-round pick for Charleston Hughes, which I think is a great steal of a pick right there. So good job, Chris Jones, Jeremy O'Day. fourth round, number 35 overall, linebacker Jacob Janke out of York. A guy who's kind of a hybrid defensive back, safety, linebacker guy. Going to play special teams, likely. Fifth round, defensive lineman, number 44 overall, Charbel DeBeer. I'm hoping I'm getting his name right. Wagner College, 6'1", 300. Basically going to compete for backup to Zach Evans. Because there's not a lot of depth behind Zach Evans. There's Tressor Mufata and...
Mac.
And McKenna Henry. So he'll compete there. Sixth round, our first O-lineman taken. I am surprised it took to the sixth round for the Riders to draft an O-lineman, Vincent Waugh out of Sherbrooke, 6'5", 285. Guy who's going to go back to school, has 1 year left of eligibility. He'll play that, and then hopefully in 2020 come to the team and see what can happen out of that. And the eighth round, probably the most intriguing pick of the draft.
I love this pick, actually.
Number 71. He's a defensive lineman, kind of linebacker hybrid. Christopher Judge. Another Judge on the team. That's because he's related to Cameron Judge, the older brother of Cameron Judge. This guy's 28 years old.
Been out of football for 4 years.
Hasn't played football since 2015, so we're already laughing at that point. But I think it's pretty cool that Cam Judge's brother gets a chance to play with him and see what happens. And I think this is a good pick because it's an eighth round pick. How often do these guys, A, make the roster, B, make an impact? Okay, Joshua Stanford.
Yeah, I was going to say Stanford.
He was the 8th round pick.
He was 7th, wasn't he?
No, he was the first pick of the
8th round. That's right. That's when they expanded it, right?
So, I mean, and who knows whether Stanford's going to be able to stick around in BC, but how often do those guys ever start? If they can turn into a special teams player, that's a great story. That's a good pick right there. If you can get a full-time special teams player in the 8th round, and that's what this guy is. He's a special teams demon. I think it's great.
And you know what?
Who cares? It's an eighth-round pick. If the guy doesn't make it, you cut him anyway.
And the thing is, though, he was out of football, and apparently, I didn't know why they drafted him, because obviously, if he's been out there for a while, you shouldn't have to draft him, but Calgary was kicking the tires on him, so they figured they'd put a claim on him.
I think it's also cool that his dad acting in Stargate 1.
Well, he's the God of War. He's the voice of Kratos.
Yeah, and Christopher Judge, well, Jr. here, I guess.
Yeah.
He was also doing a little bit of acting in the last little bit, too. So, I don't know. I just think it's kind of a fun pick. It's a weird pick. But, again, it was in the eighth round.
How often do you see a 28-year-old guy get drafted in the CFL? Right? I mean, at best, you're getting 3-4 years out of the guy.
At least he wasn't a dead guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's been expansion drafts with dead guys. But it's... No, I think it's a good pick. what's it going to hurt? Honestly, you got to claim on the guy. He was a special teams, like you said, demon, and what the hell? Roll the dice.
If he makes it, great. If he doesn't, he doesn't. You cut him. It doesn't matter. It's an eighth round pick.
It's nothing more than a publicity pick, and I love it. Why not?
Hell, we took Teal Orban in like the sixth round 1 year. That was just a hometown for fun pick.
Which led to my favorite moment of all time, having an all Regina backfield at an exhibition game.
That was with him and Stu Ford, right?
Stu Ford and Neil Hughes.
Yeah.
I miss Stu Ford. We should get him on the show.
Good kid. We liked him when he was here. That the big long touchdown he had against BC. That was pretty cool. Like, that was a good local moment. Oh, we have cookies.
And we're done. Goodbye. Thank you, Amy. Thank you.
And this pause brought to you by Amy's Bakery.
We can give him a dog right now.
Yeah. You guys going to give a little review of the cookies after one bite?
They're pumpkin-y.
That's a good thing.
That's, I know. They're very
pumpkin,
good thing.
They're a pumpkin.
I'm surprised Steve even, he's going to eat them and didn't say them to October.
Steve is eating pumpkin and it's not even October.
I taste the disappointment and it's delicious.
He's about to slap you in the back of your head.
I said it's delicious.
Very good.
She's actually going to slap you.
I was going to spray you with the tap, but then I realized this is my house.
And I'd have to clean it up. Okay, well, back to the draft here. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I don't know a lot about the CFL draft. I know who, you know, what positions I want, but I don't know much about the players themselves. So to help us out with that and to break down the Riders' picks, TSN 1150's Marshall Ferguson is on the line. Marshall, hey, thanks for taking our call.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's one of those things that, for some reason, even though everybody that I'm sure listens to this podcast that follows the CFL and watches the games and everything, for some reason, U-Sports still remains really niche, and a lot of the draft stuff remains really niche. So it's fun to try and dive into it and hopefully help people understand the players that they're getting, because there are a lot of really good players that have come from the same situations and backgrounds as the guys that these teams got this year.
So Riders going into this draft, we knew that they needed receiver. That was the big thing. That's the biggest hole on this team in terms of Canadian positions. And tell us about their first pick receiver, Justin McInnes, in the first round.
Yeah, I wish somebody else would have told me they needed receivers as badly as they did, because then I wouldn't have looked like an idiot in my mock draft. But it was obviously, when I look back on it now, and it's funny because, you know, you go through a couple of months of grading everything and looking at positional needs and all of that, and then the draft is done and you're like, oh, well, yeah, I am stupid, because you realize afterwards, like, that was absolutely their top need no matter what. And I should have read more stuff out of Regina to understand that better, but I thought, because it was kind of like a foundational cultural draft for Jeremy O'Day and Craig Dickinson, and I thought, honestly, that they would just go kind of status quo and go lineman and build for depth and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, the first couple of picks that they ended up going with there, Justin McInnes, there's a lot to like about Justin McInnes, and I understand that the national group there for the Riders in receiving right now is not the deepest, and it doesn't have necessarily the most top-end talent. It's a funny one, right, because you got some older guys that are mixed into the flow, and then you've also got a group of younger guys that are trying to find their way, especially in that national group. So McInnes is going to add to that right away. I don't know if he's going to start right away. I mean, you guys would know the depth chart a little bit better than I do out there at Saskatchewan, but to me, he has absolutely the ability to be able to step in and basically just run away from people in a lot of different spots. His length is probably his best advantage that he has. He's quick off the line. He made some really nice catches in a game that I watched where they played at Nebraska for Arkansas State there. So yeah, he is absolutely somebody that I could see in 5 years, you know, give him that kind of time window to develop and find his footing and all the rest in the CFL, where he could be kind of one of those top 5 to top 10 national receivers, and maybe even better than that. Like, who knows what the ceiling is, but for this draft, I think he was a really good pick. I thought Hergie Mayala was going to be the first receiver off the board. I was wrong on that. I mean, he fell to the back end of the first round and got taken by Calgary, but I'm excited. I hope that we get to see Mayala for the Stampeders and McInnes for Saskatchewan go against each other for the next couple of years.
Then in the second round, the Riders reached out and got basically a hometown boy with Braden Linus.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about him?
He's a really cool story. Like, I don't know if I've ever honestly seen a prospect, guys, that is like this, because he's gone from being a little bit more slimmed down as a receiver, as a pure receiver, playing major Division I football, because he played in the Pac-12, we all know now, and he was at Washington, and people think, okay, yeah, well, you're at a big school, you play in a Power 5 conference, but at the point that he was at Washington, they were legit. Like, that was when they had Browning, their quarterback, going. He was a Heisman Trophy conversation kind of guy, and they had, you know, Braden working alongside some other receivers. He made a couple of big catches. I'm sure you guys have seen now the one that he made against USC back when he was still at Washington, where he kind of jumps over a defender and hooks the ball from around him. Like, he's got crazy good ball skills. But the reason that I say that he's different, that, I mean, because we've seen a lot of guys that are like that, right? Oh, big school, talented, athletic, good for him. But I haven't seen a lot of guys that go from that end up transferring. And when they end up transferring, they go to a place where they get told, hey, you're going to play tight end, or you're going to play fullback, or you're going to be this H-back. And then they go there, and basically they put on some weight, and they get a little thicker, they get a little bigger. And that's all good, because a lot of the time, you guys know this, that the prospect says they're going into their third, fourth year. If they are told, hey, you have a better chance to make, you know, the NFL as a fullback or as a blocking tight end or something like that, guys will try to bulk up to answer that call. Like, I remember Regis Cebisu from Montreal is one that comes to mind. Somebody that really just tried to get thicker and grow and change his game a little bit, his style to fit the NFL, because he thought that's where the big payday was. But Dickey basically did that. He went down to New Mexico, and he got asked to do something that, as a pure receiver and a very, very talented receiver, I don't think he was all that comfortable doing. I talked to a couple of scouts at the Combine that said they had watched a lot of his film, and I honestly hadn't watched a lot, but I'd kind of seen bits and pieces, and they said his blocking was, like, suspect at best. And I was thinking, well, that doesn't really make sense to have, like, an inline athletic tight end that you're asking then to try and block defensive ends and outside linebackers in the run game. So he ended up basically being two different styles of player at two different schools, both in the NCAA. And the question for me going into the draft was, what is his fit? Like, where will he fit in best? And I wondered whether a team like Saskatchewan, because of the hometown connection you're talking about, would bring him in and try to turn him into Spencer Moore, because Spencer Moore obviously moving on to Montreal this offseason. I wondered, you know, if you got to fill that void, if you like that style of player in Saskatchewan, then maybe that's the answer. I still think that could be part of what he tries to do, but I don't think he's the blocker Spencer Moore is, but I also don't think the Riders care all that much. I think they just want him to slim down, get back to being the University of Washington guy, maybe throw him in the box once in a while. We all know that's a requirement of Canadian receivers, but yeah, I think he's a big body. He's unique. He's had a strange path to getting to where he's going to, but I think it's all in the rearview mirror now. I think he's just going to be kind of a slimmed down receiver that's got great hands and ability to kind of get away from people.
So the Riders only having 6 picks in this year's draft. To me, the most curious pick, I guess, is the last round pick, Christopher Judge out of Cal Poly. 28 years old, older brother of Cam Judge, and we talked about that earlier on our show here. But overall, what's your grade, and what do you take out of the Riders draft this year?
I was so angry at the Riders for not drafting Chris Merchant, the quarterback from Western, in that last round. Like, I was just thinking to myself, like, you didn't get Noah Pickton. Everybody wanted that story to be this big, beautiful, kind of tie a bow on it. No, he ends up going down and being a part of the Argonauts now. And I'm like, you got this late round pick. It's a throwaway pick. It would get the fan base excited. It would create conversation about, you know, replacing Brandon Bridge and having a national on the roster, and will the ratio change? And like, in your guys' market there in Regina, having these types of conversations with your fan base, I think, are more meaningful because how passionate your fan base is. And that's the thing that always jumps out to me when I think about, you know, well, what if they went with Chris Merchant, they could have created that. And then you look at it and you're like, well, why that pick? Like, why is that the one? And again, they've got their own research and their own reasoning behind it. But yeah, I was kind of sitting at my iPad and I almost slapped it off the table. I'm like, come on, man, that would have been fun, because Merchant didn't get drafted and I would have loved to seen him. But my overall grade, I would say, for the Riders on this draft, I would say it was a B+. Like, it wasn't anything crazy. I think Jeremy O'Day did a really good job of addressing the needs that he had to, and that obviously was the receiving group. I think he targeted the receivers that he wanted to get, and I think he got them. Like, I don't think that they would have gone for a Kayon Julian Grant just based on the type of player that I think Saskatchewan wants to include in their offense. I think Braden Dickey was probably more likely to be the guy, especially, again, with the connection that we talked about to there. It just makes a heck of a lot of sense for him. And then, yeah, I look at Justin McInnes, and the thing about the CFL draft is, when you get a national that's played in the NCAA that has the ability that is that of an international, not to say the national kids can't hold their own, but the idea of picking up somebody from an NCAA school that's kind of, we always say ratio breaker, but to me it's just like you just forget where they're from because they just look and act like they fit on the football field. Justin McInnes is that. So beyond that, Jacob Jenke I thought was a really good pick. It's kind of this combo DBLB kind of thing from York, and he's very successful at what he's doing. He's pretty athletic too. He's got a good kind of skill set for special teams in a year that was really weak when it came to the linebacker class. I think there was only 5 linebackers drafted in the entire 73 picks this year. So you kind of have to find those special teamers elsewhere in a draft that doesn't have your usual linebackers that are ready to just run downfield and cover and be able to get after on specials. So yeah, I would say it was average, but it was a good average. It's not one of those where you're looking at and you're like, wow, that was uninspired. I think they did a good job. They stuck to their board. They got players that they want to work with, and now they get a chance to develop them.
So obviously there's more than just the Riders in this league. Who's the big winner, do you think?
I think as sad as this is, I know for people in Saskatchewan and also for most teams around the league, most fan bases, how does Calgary just keep getting the best player on the board? Like, I honestly don't understand how this happens. How, to me, like, I wrote a recap on CFL.ca at the end of last week where I was kind of giving my 10 best picks. And as I was going through and trying to figure out, you know, oh, wow, the Stampeders got Fraser Sopik at 31. That seems like a really good value considering what his kind of position was, the linebacker that's going to become probably a DB, free safety, and special teamer from Western. And then I was like, oh, wow, yeah, they got Vincent Desjardins at the back end of the second round. I'm like, yeah, I kind of have like a late first round, early second round idea or grade, if you want to call it that, on him. And I just kept going down through it. And every time that I would try to figure out, you know, what was my top 10 favorite pick, I would just see Calgary got a really good player at a higher number in the draft than I expected. And to me, that's kind of what the draft is about, is being able to accrue talent. It seems like more than anybody, Calgary just kind of sits back. There's a lot of teams out there that go for specific need, I would say. Like Edmonton was like, we want pass rusher. And Saskatchewan's like, we need receiver. Calgary's just like, yeah, you guys do your thing. We'll just be over here. And then whenever we look at our board and our pick comes up, we'll just go, yeah, that player would work nicely for us. They just kind of pick up people, and I think they mold them into whatever it is that they think will help them succeed. So Vincent Desjardins, I think, is going to be a stud of a CFL player. I think he's going to be very similar to what you've had there across your defensive line for a couple of years now with Zach Evans. Since he came back and being there in Saskatchewan with the Riders after being in Ottawa, I feel like that's the type of player that Desjardins is. So, yeah, he's a good value. Mayala, who knows? I mean, maybe he turns into a stud, maybe he turns into a bust because these NCAA guys, we don't really know, but they certainly believe in him a lot. And so I think Calgary is probably the overall winner when push comes to shove. With that being said, Winnipeg addressed some needs that they had, offensive line, defensive line. If Kongbo turns into a stud pass rusher, then they probably win the draft. For the Tiger Cats, they scooped up David Unger, the receiver that popped up on the board very soon before the draft. I think if he turns into the next Luke Tasker, slot receiver, inside shaky guy, and June Jones uses him the way we think he will, then you know, maybe they win the draft. I think this is the fun part of it, is that depending on how it goes and how these guys develop, I think that'll really give us the true answer moving forward.
Now, I had a bit of a rant on draft day, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. excuse me. Before the third round, we saw the first ever CFL territorial draft. What are your thoughts on the CFL moving to this territorial draft and giving, you know, 2 of 9 teams a pick in this, you know, round 2.5?
Yeah, so my whole thing on it, and it's only because I've gone through and looked at the history of the CFL draft, and I understand that it hasn't happened since 1984, and the idea of throwing it in as late in the offseason before the draft as they did, and giving it to the teams that they did, and having it be Montreal and Toronto picking 6 of 9 picks over that span towards the back end of the second round, start of the third, it was like watching, you know, via rail commercial, basically, where it was like Montreal, Toronto, Toronto, Montreal, oh look, Winnipeg, Toronto, Montreal, Montreal, Toronto, and it just kept going back and forth. When I realized that's the way the lineup was set, I was like, I don't really know about this. But the thing that I'd be interested to see what your perspective is there, but like my whole thing with it is just that you don't really need territorial draft selections. I understand that it was a bit of a move by the league to say, hey, we traveled across the country with Randy Ambrosi and his road trip, and this was something we heard from fans, was that you want more local players on your local teams, and you want to be able to cheer for the people that you know from your market or that are hometown kids. Well, I don't have to tell you guys, that happens every single CFL draft. So I'm not against it, but the reality is, like, it's very much an optics play for me, because I just believe that this is happening all the time. Like, Mitchell Pickton getting picked up by the Riders, that didn't require a territorial draft selection. Like, Mike Daly for the Hamilton Tiger Cats getting picked up, he's a Kitchener-Waterloo guy who played at McMaster, he didn't need a territorial draft selection. And we've seen all the time where players like Suk Chung from Winnipeg end up re-signing a free agency and going home to BC, or where you have, you know, Danny Vandervoort let go by BC, and there's rumors that he's going to end up with either the Argos or the Tiger Cats because he's from Barrie, Ontario. So there's always these situations where guys typically go closer to home when they become available at the end of the draft. So it's always smarter for teams to draft around their local content, and that's why the territorial stuff, I'm like, okay, cool, like it's a nice little throw-in, it's not really a game changer, and it really shouldn't change the way the teams approach it. I do think it shook up the board in a funny way this year, though, because Samuel Thomason, who got taken by the Alouettes, I don't think he's worthy of that 18th or 19th pick, whatever it was, and Matthew Boateng, I think, would have fell into the late 20s had he not gone earlier, and I'm not sure he would have even gone to Toronto, but it's just one of those things where you get a selection, you look at your draft board, you look at where players are from, and then you're like, yeah, sure. I mean, we have an extra pick. Why not? Let's take a shot on a small cover corner that really doesn't have any film from Fresno State since he played at Kansas. So it doesn't really change the way that I think the teams approach it, but if it makes fans happy, then hey, good on you.
Marshall Ferguson of TSN 1150 and CFL.ca. Thanks again, Marshall.
Thanks, guys.
There's Marshall Ferguson of TSN 1150 and CFL.ca telling us a little bit more about the draft. And I don't know, I'm excited for these receivers. I think two great picks by Jeremy O'Day, and I thought he knocked this draft out of the park. And if one of these guys becomes a starter and you get another, you know, special teams player out of it down the pipeline, that's a very good draft, especially your first draft.
And like I said, if the ratio changes, we are laughing. Like, we're actually looking really good right now.
All of a sudden, we go from probably the worst Canadian talent in the league a couple of years ago to
right
one
up there.
Of the best ones.
Yeah. I mean, with six picks in the draft to get a B-plus rating from Marshall Ferguson in your first draft, good job, O'Day.
Yep.
You done good.
All right. Well, we got CBA talks. They're kind of ongoing. That's about it. That's all we know. Hopefully there's a season.
There'll be a season.
That's the update on the CFL CBA talks with the PA right now. So we'll keep monitoring that and see what happens there. But I don't think we're going to miss preseason. We're not going to miss training camp. I don't even think we'll miss the starting of training camp, which is supposed to be on May 19th. For all teams to open up, so
especially not with the league threatening suspensions now.
Keep that circled in the calendar, and they'll be there in Saskatoon, May 19th.
I'm sure there'll be a tentative deal announced like 2 days.
Probably
before.
On the 18th.
Yeah.
And then they won't ratify it until June before the first like regular season week.
Yeah, they'll negotiate all through camp, and then
It's almost as if that's happened before.
In accordance with the prophecy.
Yeah. So
welcome to CBA negotiations with the CFL.
I want to get to some fan questions. We got some good questions this week, and I want to throw them out to you guys and see what you guys think. Jordan Karst, if someone were traveling to Regina for a home game, outside of the Labor Day Classic and the home opener, what's the best on the schedule? Strength of opponent and likelihood of good weather are important to me.
Ooh. So open the schedule.
So let's bring up the schedule. Now, first off, you can't go wrong with getting a Calgary Stampeders game.
I was about to say, it doesn't matter when.
They're defending champs. They're our biggest rival right now. Winnipeg's catching back up there as our biggest rival. But look, since 2004, it's been the Stamps. Yeah. And they're the team to beat. Everybody's trying to knock them off.
You can pretty much stop this discussion right now because we played them
week two
at a night game at home early in the season.
And that's a Saturday night game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's going to be the game to come to. If you get a chance to come to any game, I mean, I love watching Riders versus Stamps. There's no better rivalry in the CFL in my mind right now than those two. Labor Day be damned.
What's the theme that night?
That is the Sasky night, I believe.
Is it?
Yeah.
God, I hate those themes.
I'm going to have an article coming out about the theme nights. And where's the dog shows, damn it?
Oh, there'll still be dog shows.
There's
been a dog show every year since
there
forever.
There better be. I'm very, very heated about that.
It's the only halftime show that people like.
Yeah. I mean, Big Sugar I think is great, but the last time they were relevant.
You'd rather see Big Dogs?
Well,
come on, they just announced Nelly today and people are going nuts.
What? Who?
Nelly.
Nelly's playing the Queen City X.
Like,
can we talk about the Queen City X lineup for a minute? What a great lineup. Holy cow. If this is like 20 years ago, I'd be having
that's exactly it.
Okay? You got, and this is kind of fun, actually, with the Riders game that weekend.
Yeah.
You have Tom Cochran and Red Rider playing the Queen City X at 5:30.
Yep.
You have the Rider game at 7 that night.
7:30. But yeah, that's going to be a gong show in that area.
The halftime show is a soon-to-be-announced major Canadian talent, Tom Cochran, who's probably just going to walk across the field there.
Probably.
And then April Wine closing out at, 10:30, I think? Yeah. 10 o'clock, 10:30, something like that, at the Queen City X Grandstand. 98 degrees in O-Town. You guys know I am all in for that one.
You're going to be front row.
Liquid Dreams, come on.
You beside my wife, and that's it. You guys will be up there, like, throwing your underwear and clothing, I assume.
I don't do that. That's weird.
You don't wear it?
Both.
Okay.
I can't throw it because I don't wear it.
And that gross out moment was brought to you by Alex.
Nelly, the rapper. If he's saying like all his stuff from Country Grammar, that, sign me up for that. Yeah, don't give me
play the country. Yeah, just play the Country Grammar. And you know what? I saw him last year at the casino.
You went to that?
Yeah, I did. Of course I did. I won. Pretty sure I won tickets through. Who did I win them through? Might have been CGME.
Oh,
I've never been happier to win tickets. Like, you could hear it on the radio. I love Nelly growing up. Was not disappointed. Not in the least.
Oh, yeah.
He puts on a decent show for a 40-year-old, 50-year-old guy acting 20.
And then the RSO is doing a big pyrotechnic show, but they're also playing songs from Journey and Queen.
Nice.
Ooh. Which is actually kind of cool. So, that's a pretty good lineup.
Actually,
that's not bad at all.
Especially 20 years ago.
Yeah. That's especially 20 years ago, that thing would have been bumping.
Right?
Yeah.
Ah, nostalgia goes a long way in Saskatchewan.
Does it ever?
It's because we can't get it many of the big acts when they're actually popular. We get them when they're done.
Anyway, I'm excited for Big Sugar for the home opener. Anyway.
There's the roundabout.
Yeah, we finally we're back.
So, yeah, the Stamps game, that's the one you want to come to, Jordan.
Definitely.
Mint or strawberry fluoride?
Oh, for the dentist, because you went to the dentist today.
Oh, neither. Screw the dentist. You can hear it in my voice today. This sucks.
Are you anti-dentite?
I'm anti anything with a needle in it, so yes. Except tattoos.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Don't ask me. I'm a hypocrite. I just ate a pumpkin cookie and, you know.
You're all sorts of hypocritical today. All right. We'll go strawberry just for fun.
Sure.
Yeah, bubble gum's good. Bubble gum's the correct answer to that.
Pina colada.
Never had it.
Lane asks, how many of our new draft picks will be on the team game day roster after week 12?
Two. Two at most. Maybe three.
I'm going with three. Yeah. I think both are receivers.
And Christopher Judge.
And Christopher Judge. As special teams. Yeah. I really think he'll make the team.
Does he make the team because he's good enough to make the team, or does he make the team as a publicity pick?
They aren't going to keep him around for publicity pick.
No, I don't think this regime and this new age riders, they don't give a crap about that.
Yeah, we've watched O'Day say no to how many former riders? And
yeah.
So, yeah, no. Jeff Knox again. Yeah, the receivers, if McInnes doesn't end up in the NFL, I think he'll be here. I think Dickie Linus will be here. And, yeah, Judge. Because Waz going back to college, and that leaves, what, one more?
Jacob Jahnke.
Yeah.
Linebacker.
He might be on special teams, or he's going to be practice roster, I think.
Yeah. So, I think we'll see a couple on the game day roster. Stacy asks if training camp goes ahead as scheduled. Is it in Saskatoon? Yes, it is in Saskatoon. All the training camp will be there, and then they'll fly out to Calgary for the first preseason game and then come back to Saskatoon, then to Regina for the final preseason game, and then they're just back in Regina from then on.
And the Riders love that because they can house the players all in one location. You don't have to worry about some guys going home and some guys finding hotels. Exactly. Everyone stays in res.
And it's a team building thing, too. They're all together. You build that relationship as a team.
And for a publicity standpoint, the Riders are Saskatchewan's team, so doing that in Saskatoon is also good publicity for keeping them relevant everywhere in the province.
And Dallas Bergen has a whole bunch of questions in here, but talk about Canadian defensive backs, Edom and Buca, and we kind of did that already too. I think it's a good 1-2 punch in terms of Canadian defensive backs. Do you think Buca can be a ratio-breaking acquisition or reacquisition? I don't know about ratio-breaking. I don't think you would put him at corner. He could.
You could, but then you have no one to back him up, and that's always the rub with national players. You always want to have the next guy up, because if you have an injury, all of a sudden your ratio is all screwy.
And that's where I think the loss of Kevin Francis, if anything, might hurt this team a little bit, just in the sense that you don't have that backup, because if you were able to start, you know, I guess the 7 Canadians, and you don't have, or 8, if you wanted to go 8, but you don't have a backup for a Canadian defensive back, then you got to shuffle things around if one of them were to get injured.
And that's always been the rub of having a Canadian quarterback. You need to have a backup for him, or what's the point of even having one? And that's why Toronto has 2 or 3, depending on who you talk to.
And also keep in mind the defensive backs, and I guess you can include the Sam linebacker position in there as well. What can we keep an eye on in camp in terms of ratio there? Do you think anything changes from what we saw last year? Is it just going to be I think Adam biggest... and Buka at safety, and then you got your Judge at linebacker, Judge Hurl rotation, whatever they were doing there.
I think the thing to watch Evans? There is, yeah, Evans is by far the starter at that position. Is Judge going to be the every down back they want him to be, like every down linebacker they want him to be?
But if not, if he is going to be that guy, this theory's got to do it.
Yeah.
I think it's just going to be a big rotation of guys on defense, much the same. There's going to be certain packages again, and our defense is going to be very similar to the way it was last year. They're going to have certain packages where Sam Hurl's on and another defensive back. And then they're going to have other packages where Cameron Judge comes in with another linebacker. Like, it's just going to be, I guess, controlled chaos in terms of what the defense is doing. And it's to keep the offense guessing a little bit and throw different looks at them. And our guys on defense are so versatile at what they can do that they could literally line up anywhere. And this is where I'm going to miss Toby Antigua, because you can put him at safety, you can put him at linebacker, you can put him at end. Like, he was the ultimate Swiss Army knife.
But the worst part
of there's other guys on our team that can do that as well, too.
The worst part of the Hurl-Judge switch, though, is always they always send Judge out on passing down when they knew it was going to be passing down, and Hurl on. So yeah, all they do is switch it up, and I think Judge could play both run and pass. Hurl, on the other hand, he's not that good on pass coverage.
I don't think he was a big liability.
He's not the liability that Bomber fans or
everybody was saying he was going to be. But
he was acceptably average.
He was fine. I didn't have a problem with him last year.
He did the job he was brought in to do.
And this year, be a backup to Judge, and you can play him in a pinch if Judge is hurt for a couple games or something like that, and he can play special teams.
And you got
and he's actually really, really good at special teams.
And you got a bunch of other young linebackers behind him, like Tights, and names are actually escaping me right now.
Chevrier.
Yeah, there you go. So, yeah, you got other guys. There. Yeah, there's depth. For the first time in a long time, we actually have depth at positions that we needed.
Weird.
I know, eh?
This team's looking pretty good. It's just they got to get their offense figured out. And if they keep Zach Claros healthy, we have a fighter's chance to win every single game, and that's really all you can ask for, right?
Yep.
So the defense is going to be asked to keep them in games, much like last year, and they're not going to score as many touchdowns as they did last year. I can't see that happening.
But as long as our offense scores more touchdowns than they did last year, we should be okay.
They moved the ball at times very well last year between the 20s and had to settle for a whole lot of field goals. So if they can convert a couple of those into touchdowns, our offense is all of a sudden not at the bottom anymore. You're looking at middle of the pack, even in the top third.
The nice thing is we don't have to worry about them throwing Brandon Bridge in at within the 10-yard line for no reason.
They'll do that with Cody Fajardo again, because why?
Shut your dirty mouth.
You know what's going to happen.
You guys got anything else this week here?
Nah, I'm good.
No, good, because there's one more cookie and I really want to eat it.
Yeah, we didn't wait. We're so professional, we didn't wait.
There's cookies in front of me, I don't mess around.
Guess in my place, you guys can have the first cookie.
There you go.
All right. Can I have a cookie?
No. Well, I guess that's going to do it for us this week on the Piffles Podcast. Guys, we're a couple weeks away from training camp. Wow. We just had the draft. It's sneaking up on us.
This offseason was short.
That was part of Randy Ambrosi's goal, is to be in the news, and the CFL was in the news all the time.
The only disappointment of this offseason was there was no CFL week. That quickly became my favorite event of the offseason.
Yeah.
Not that there was a ton of events in the offseason, but...
Yeah.
Could have gone for another trip to Ottawa. That would have been fun.
Yeah. Always a good time.
Next year.
But anyway, we got a couple things coming up pretty soon, so we'll have our third annual Piffles Bowl. We're going to send some details out about that in the near future, so raising money, playing football, touch football on Taylor Field.
Can we get?
We could do it at Taylor Field. It probably cost a lot less for people. Just a big park. But we're going to be doing that at Mosaic Stadium. That'll be a lot of fun. Raising money for Hope's Home charity here in Regina. That's going to be great.
Can I just give a huge shout out to Zach Evans for winning the Swinging with the Stars for Hope's Home last night?
They raised a lot of money.
$260,000.
That's amazing.
Wow.
Friend of the show, Amanda Ruler, there as well, too. And actually her dance partner, Eddie Alvaro, I went to school with him as a kid. So that's kind of cool to see that. Banjo Bowl. We're doing that again.
Are we?
Yeah, we are.
Let's do it.
We kind of have to. We booked everything.
We got to go to Winnipeg.
We don't have to go to Winnipeg. We get to go to Winnipeg.
That
doesn't make it sound any better. Anyway, it's going to be another ride.
Actually, back to Winnipeg.
Yeah, bus trip out to Winnipeg. We're going to send some details out about that very soon, so keep your eyes peeled for that. and some other great stuff coming down the pipeline. So keep it tuned to Piffles Podcast. Give us a follow on Twitter at Piffles Pod. You can follow me at Real Alex D.
You can follow me at Safamod.
Follow me at Greg on Sports.
Check us out on Instagram, Piffles Pod. We're on Facebook as well, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. Go to the website, PifflesPodcast.com. Piffles Podcast, of course, your Saskatchewan Rough Riders premier fan podcast. We're brought to you by our great friends at Dairy Queen on Elphinstone Street and Sass Drive in Regina. Special thanks as well to Kathy Festian of Royal LePage Regina Realty, Tallgrass Apparel, Churchill Brewing Company, and Underdogs Memorabilia for their support to make this show happen. We gotta go. Time to leave you. This is Ghost Behind Your Mind by Tyler Gilbert. The Ghost.